welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. I want to thank you for joining me on this episode of the podcast. We have a lot of new listeners around here, so I want to say welcome to our wonderful community, and I hope you feel inspired and encouraged and validated in your motherhood, both the good parts and the hard parts. We're all in this together, and we're all cheering each other on, and I'm cheering you on, and you're probably doing a better job than you think you are today. So I hope this interview brings you a lot of peace and new ideas as well. Because I'm speaking with one of my favorite parenting experts. It's Dr. Laura Markham. I've talked about her before and linked to her resources before. She's the founder behind ahaparenting.com, and she is an amazing clinical psychologist who is a parenting expert. If you go to her website, ahaparenting.com, there is literally an article on anything you could possibly want to look up information on. What I love about her is she's not telling you exactly how to parent, but she really helps you to see it from your child's perspective. And when we can do that, we can really resolve a lot of our issues with a lot greater peace and love and compassion and empathy towards our kids. And that is what has really drawn me towards her, this peaceful parenting vantage point. So today we're going to chat about her motherhood journey. How did she get into this field of research? And what did her parenting journey look like? So I can't wait to chat with her today. It's such an honor to have her on the show. So let's get to it with Dr. Laura Markham. All right, I want to welcome Dr. Laura Markham today. Hi, Dr. Laura.
Hi, Jessica.
It is such an honor to be talking to you. Let me tell you how I found you. Can I just share?
Please.
So I currently have a six-year-old. I have three boys, but my oldest is 6.5. And when he was like 2 and 3 years old, he was a challenge. I mean, he was a challenge from birth, but just the toddler years, I just thought, how can I ever have another child? Because he was just so challenging and he was just so strong-willed. And I find now that many of the attributes that are instilled within children that they show as a young child often becomes their strengths as they get older. But as a toddler, strong-willed, stubborn, opinionated, manipulative at times, you know, Those are tough to deal with in a 2 and 3 year old body. And so my mom was trying to help me, and she's Googling, you know, how to deal with strong-willed children and how to communicate properly and da, da, da. And she found you, and she signed up for your AHA Parenting newsletter. And she's like, Jessica, you need to get on this. She is amazing. And I love her perspective. And the more research and the more I've read of your work, I am so in line with your philosophy about peaceful parenting and just loving kids into doing what you want them to do, essentially. And so I just want to thank you. It has transformed my relationship with my first son and my other children because of your philosophy and what I've learned from you. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm so glad that it was helpful to you.
Yes.
And it sounds like you went ahead and had more children.
So I did.
Your son must have become a little easier for you
yes.
at that point.
Yes, he did. He did. And it's paid off on all my other kids as well, keeping with that same type of philosophy. But, you know, sometimes you have to learn by fire. And I did, certainly with him. And now he is matured nicely and is, you know, I'm seeing those attributes in him that once were very difficult, definitely taking shape in a far more positive way because he's learning how to use them in a more positive way. And so I just thank you. Thank you very much. So it's an honor to chat with you today. So will you just give me a little background on yourself for people that may not know you, Dr. Laura?
Sure. I am the author of 2 books, Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids, the subtitle of which is How to Stop Yelling and Start Connecting. But it's not really a book about yelling. It's a book about connection mm-hmm. and a book about how we can take care of ourselves to stay centered so that we can connect with our kids and so that we can coach them to be their best selves rather than controlling them with punishment or even praise. So that's the first book. The second book was written in response to my readers of my newsletter and of my first book and the people when I speak often at schools and churches and synagogues and parenting organizations. And people always ask me sibling questions. So I wrote a book on siblings, which is Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings. And the subtitle of that is How to Stop the Fighting and Raise Friends for Life. Mm. Because I think that's what every parent really wants, is to have your children love each other. And of course, they may squabble, but to have them at core support each other and to know that we won't be here forever, but they will always have each other.
I love that. I love that. And I think that's the vision that all parents have for their families, but with different personalities and different age spacing and everything, that doesn't always come naturally. But I love that we can promote that and those types of relationships by being really intentional about how we parent.
I think that's exactly right. I think it doesn't come easily because mm-hmm. children are not born knowing automatically how to get along. I mean, how many adults automatically always get along with the people they live with? They don't, right?
Right.
So I think we didn't ourselves grow up with good skills for navigating conflict. And conflict is part of every human relationship. So for us to assume that our siblings will automatically know how to be nice, play nicely, you know, all the things we say to children, it's not going to happen. We need to coach them. Yeah. So I think humans are hardwired to be cooperative, but they're also hardwired to survive. And sometimes that means your 3-year-old is going to look at your 1-year-old and think they're a threat.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's certainly ways that we can parent that will make that 3-year-old relax and feel much more emotionally generous toward the 1-year-old. And so that was what I was aiming for in the book, was to give parents those concrete tools they could use every day.
Yeah. And I love that you're really trying to target what parents need and what they've expressed are some issues that they've been having. And then you write in response to that versus just, oh, this is what I'm interested in, so I'm just going to write whatever. This is really meaningful content. And I think both of those books are just extremely valuable for any family.
Well, you know, I have a website, ahaparenting.com. It's over 1,000 pages, free information for parents of all age kids. But I also do in my blog on that website, those blog posts are twice a week, and I send them out to a newsletter list. Mm-hmm. And of course, I hear back from my readers because the list is, you know, 110,000 people at this point.
Yeah.
So I hear back all the time from readers. So I'm always hearing what they struggle with. And parents, you know, parents are doing the hardest job in the world. They get so little support. And so the more I hear from parents, the more I'm able to. I can't answer every question that I get, of course, mm-hmm. but I'm able to respond to what I'm hearing from parents as what they struggle with most.
I love that. It's an amazing resource. And what I love about it is that it has something for every phase of parenting. Sometimes you go to a certain expert and they're experts on teens or just on potty training or just on, but literally there's something for absolutely everybody on your site. And I cannot endorse your newsletter enough because it's like there's, I don't know how many, 5 or 6 different mini articles within that newsletter. And there's always 1 or 2 that definitely speaks to where I'm at right now. And it's just like, you're a mind reader. It's amazing.
I hear that from people constantly. Were you in my house this morning?
Right.
No, I needed to hear this.
I know.
Yeah, I listen to parents. And yeah. So, and I think there's a lesson there. You're not alone. You know, if it speaks to you, it speaks to someone else, and it speaks to someone else, which means that even if the specifics are different, whether it's a potty training issue with your 3-year-old or whether it's your 13-year-old, mm-hmm. actually, they're not so different. You mm-hmm. know, there's universal truths happening in those interactions that we can use as parents to de-escalate the drama and to create more communication and connection.
Yeah, and oftentimes it just comes from putting ourselves in their shoes, right? So no matter what their age is, if we can see it from their vantage point, why they're, you know, your 3-year-old's flipping out about using the potty or whether your teenager's fighting with you about going to a party, you know, it's the same type of, you know, empathy that we want to show. And even though it's different situations, it's still the same effective tool.
Yes, exactly right, Jessica. And I would say even a step beyond that, there are universal truths of mm-hmm. human beings,
yes.
of the way all humans want to be heard, understood, respected. We can't always get our way as human beings. That isn't the way life works. And that's true for your 13-year-old or your 3-year-old and for you. Mm-hmm. But what happens when you parent this way is that children begin to realize that, oh, you know, I don't always get my way, but I get something that is, I want even more, which is I get mom or dad understanding me and supporting me and helping me through no matter what. And that's the message that we want children to come away with. That's the message that builds the relationship and that raises a resilient child.
Yeah, I love that. I don't always get what I want, but I get something else. I like that. I like that a lot. So how did you get into psychology to begin with? Was this always a passion of yours, or how did you get, and especially in terms of childhood psychology, how did you get on this path?
I have always loved children. My parents were divorced when I was young, and my mom and my stepmom had babies the same year when I was, my stepmom had babies when I was 6 and then 9. But then when I was 12, my mother had a baby and my stepmom had a baby. So there were a lot of younger kids. Plus, I have a brother 2 years younger who I still remember like walking backwards, holding his hands when he was 1 and I was 3 and I was teaching him to walk. But I always was around younger children and loved them. And my brother, who was born when I was 12, slept in my room. I got up with him at night. I took care of him all the time. And I found babies young children to be fascinating. Mm. Like, they couldn't necessarily talk about what was going on in them, but clearly there was a great deal going on. And I seemed to have a sixth sense for understanding them, maybe just because I was a child myself and I loved them. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was always drawn to kids, and I remember reading Virginia Axline, who wrote a book called Dibs in Search of Self, when I was a young teen, like 14. I read that book, and then I read a book that she wrote on play therapy, and I was just fascinated. So I think I always was fascinated by what makes humans tick, especially children. And, you know, as I say, my parents were divorced, so they were busy, they were distracted, they didn't really know how to help us work through our emotions, our feelings about the divorce and what essentially to us was the death of our family. Mm. And, you know, because that's what happens in a divorce, a family dies and the children don't get divorced, they still have their parents, but they do, their family is taken from them, and they, with any luck, develop two new families in the homes of their parents, two different homes. But it's a huge transition, and my parents had no idea how to help us with that. So I would say that all of that combined to make me quite fascinated with human beings and how people tick.
Yeah. And so this perspective and philosophy of peaceful parenting and compassion and empathy towards your children, is that always something that came naturally to you as well? It sounds like the answer is yes, but.
Well, yes and no. I would say yes and no. I would say that empathy comes somewhat naturally to me, mm-hmm. In the sense that I always saw the child's point of view, so it was easy to empathize. Mm-hmm. But I also had what I call big feelings as a child. I hadn't always had my needs met. So I'd say I was fairly reactive.
Okay.
And really what changed me was not studying psychology. Although that was useful to understand, oh, developmentally, a 3-year-old really can't sit still in a restaurant,
right,
as an instance. Or, you know, we could just sit here and brainstorm and we would come up with 40 things off the top of our heads that are not developmentally appropriate that most people think they can ask their child to do at whatever age, right? Mm-hmm. So knowing those things is very useful. But I think what changed me, what healed me, I went to therapy as a young person, college age and after, and that certainly helped me work through my own hot buttons from childhood so that I wouldn't get triggered as much later when my children were born. But I think what was most effective, really, if I had to pick one thing, is meditation.
Hmm.
Because really, Mindfulness is, I define mindfulness as being aware of your experience, of how you're perceiving the situation, all the thoughts and feelings that arise, but not reacting to it. Mm. And it's sort of the opposite of being triggered. When we're triggered, we react to it before we even know what's happening.
Right.
But when we're mindful, we sort of slow that process down. I call it stop, drop your agenda just for a moment, drop, and breathe. Mm. And when we do that, somehow the breath has this anchoring effect on us, mm. where it pulls us back into the present moment, where we're not getting triggered. So, you know, if I had been defiant when I was young to my stepfather, I would be slapped across the face, which indeed happened. Mm. So when my daughter was defiant to me, naturally, that pushed my buttons. Mm. But because I, A, had done some work in therapy, and B, had a mindfulness practice that I did actually before my kids were even born, I was able to stop, drop, breathe, and then you have a choice of how to proceed. I could remind myself, oh, she's having a really hard time here. Yes, I feel attacked, but...
Right.
And of course, what's really happening is she's being defiant. I know when a child is defiant to an adult, it's an emergency. Someone's about to get smacked, right?
Yeah.
That's what's going on in my psyche, my primal childhood psyche, because it happened to me. When that happens, we all overreact from that primal old childhood place, and we have to control the situation so no one gets smacked. We end up smacking our own kid to control them, right? So for me, in that kind of a situation, I was able to take a deep breath, pause, remind myself it wasn't, you know, my favorite little mantra was, it's not an emergency. Take another deep breath, look at my daughters, try to see it from her point of view. Wow, look how distraught she looks. She's quivering with anger, but she's ready to erupt into tears. Mm. My poor baby. Right? So instead of wanting to smack her, all of a sudden I've transitioned so that I really see it from her point of view.
Wow.
But to do that, you have to really be able to work with your own triggers and stop yourself from getting hijacked. I would say meditation really helps with that. And the research on this is that every time you do what I just described, you rewire your brain. I came out of childhood with a brain that was somewhat reactive based on my own childhood experience. So I spent my 20s and then continued after my kids were born in my 30s. I spent that time really working on my triggers so that I wouldn't respond that way, so that I would be able to take a step back, stop, drop, and breathe, and come back to the situation from a place of compassion for her as well as for me.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's amazing. And it's a great point that, you know, even for somebody that knows what they're doing like you do, and both clinically as well as just kind of, you know, having a good temperament for parenting and whatnot, there's work to be done. And sometimes we beat ourselves up as moms that we're not good enough and we don't know what we're doing. But with anything in life, things take practice. And it takes intention. And to assume that we're going to be perfect from the get-go on every aspect and every, you know, thing that we're going to deal with in motherhood, it's unrealistic. And so, it just breaks my heart to hear moms beating themselves up about, you know, being a yeller automatically or things like that. As soon as you're self-aware enough to realize my reaction is to yell, or my reaction is to be physical, or my reaction is fill in the blank, that self-awareness is critical because you can do something about it. And just like you, finding that meditation in order to calm yourself, to react in a better way, we can all do that. But it does take practice, and you don't always do it perfectly. But it doesn't mean we're not great moms striving to be better moms.
Yes, and in fact, I think that's so important for every parent to hear. And I think what's great is seeing what's happening, creating, you know, getting clear on your intention to make it different.
Yeah.
And taking a step in the right direction.
Right.
And, you know, often moms will come to me in tears and say, I'm trying and I'm not able to pull off what I want to pull off. But it's always two steps forward, one step back.
Right.
It's always that way. And everyone has work to do. As you just heard, I had work to do. We all have work to do. There's no shame in having work to do. The shame would be ignoring the work.
Right. Right. And be like, well, I'm just, I had a violent upbringing. And so that's how I'm going to be a parent. Or my mom was angry and yelling at me all the time. So that's just the way that I am. We don't have to accept that. We can change it if we choose to.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. And so how did this look in the context of your own home? How did this affect your children growing up?
Well, my daughter is a very strong-willed person who was born with big feelings.
Uh-huh.
And when she was little, people said things to me like, wow, she's a spicy one. That was when she was about three. I still remember when my daughter was one and we were at a nature center where they were showing the kids the small animals, and my son, who was 4 and a half, was sitting in the circle with big eyes looking at what was going on. And my daughter, who was one, was all over the room. And afterwards, a mom introduced herself to me, and then she said, is your daughter always like this? And I said, always like what? And she said, well, she just never stops. And I said, oh, well, really, they're both that way. He just was interested in the animals, so he wasn't moving. But it never occurred to me that that was unusual. So I say this to illustrate that my kids weren't necessarily easy.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes I hear from parents, well, this kind of parenting wouldn't work on a strong-willed child. You know, my son was a little more compliant, willing to please, but still, strong-willed.
Right.
Had when he wanted something, he is still the most persistent person in the world. And, you know, my daughter was more volatile, actually. And she jokes that if she'd been raised by somebody else, she'd probably be a criminal. So I guess what I would say is they felt understood.
Yeah.
They didn't always get what they want. You know, we had a rule, no screen time in our home. So, you know, they certainly felt they should have screens at times and chafed against that rule. We also had no junk food, not very much sugar. We always did the extra credit homework. There were expectations that, you know, my daughter says, Mom, you know what's worst about you as a mother? And I say, what? And she's 21 now. She says, we shouldn't have had to do the extra credit. And I say, well, you did. It didn't mean you got straight A's. And she says, yeah, but that's not what's important in life. And that, I thought, you know, she's probably right.
Yeah.
Like, that was my own sort of being compelled that they do well in school that probably put extra pressure on them that wasn't necessary.
So would you go back and change that about that aspect?
I would definitely go back and change that. I would ask a question about what's good about doing the extra homework.
Okay, that's good.
Why might we choose to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happened? He would choose to and she wouldn't. And that's okay.
And it would all be fine, right?
Exactly. They both. I think this is a really important thing as I think back on my parenting. They're going to come out okay.
Right.
I think all of us walk around unsure whether that's true and a little bit afraid. And so I was sort of pioneering this kind of parenting.
Right.
Without a lot of... you know, I remember the first time as a parenting expert when somebody said to me, way back when my daughter was maybe 4 or 5, someone said to me, but how long do you do a timeout for? And I said, oh, well, I've never done a timeout. I was just beginning in this work, right? I actually think timeouts are probably a bad idea. And I had nothing to back that up. I had not done the research to back that up yet. It was just instinctive. I knew what would happen if I gave my daughter a timeout. At that time, I was doing this really with no substantiation. And, you know, I didn't have any idea that, not I didn't have any idea, I was pretty sure it would turn out, but I didn't have any proof. You know, the proof came much later. But I would add that one of the reasons I was able to do that with my daughter, who was the most difficult of the two, is that my son, my older child, I had never had a need to discipline in any way. Hmm. Not because he's perfect, but because approaching parenting from a place of understanding him and what he needed and helping him with his emotions meant that certainly I set limits all the time, but I didn't ever, there was never a need to do more than offer guidance. I didn't need to punish him. Hmm. And it would have felt like I was doing a violation to him to purposely cause him pain to get him to do what I wanted. So right from the start, I knew that. And as I started to read the research, that became crystal clear to me.
Right. And I love what you said on your mom conference little presentation, when you said, if you stop assuming that your kids are trying to be brats, like you can see them in a different way. They're really, you know, when they're asking for the candy at the checkout, they're not trying to annoy you and they're not trying to be entitled. They're just kids. And if you wanted a piece of candy, you'd put it in your cart, you know, but they don't have that control. So they are asking you, and how you handle that will dictate how well it goes. But you know, just stop assuming that they're trying to ruin your life or they're trying to get in your way. And so many times that's where we jump to as parents, because we just have our own agenda, but they're part of our world. And so they deserve that kind of recognition, that their feelings are valid, their thoughts and their comments are valid, but we can definitely guide them in what's appropriate, but we need to stop shooting them down or assuming they're out to get us. But even though it feels like that sometimes.
Well, that's the first rule of parenting, right?
Right.
Don't take it personally.
Yeah, that's hard, Dr. Laura. It's hard not to take it personally. I just remember crying sitting in the kitchen with my kid on the other side of the baby gate, just being like, he's throwing things at me. What am I supposed to do? It's hard not to take it personally.
Yes, it is. It's hard not to take it personally.
Yeah.
And that's where the work is.
Right.
Make us grow up. You know, that's the big secret of parenting, is that we all think we're grown-ups when we have kids, but we aren't. We actually aren't. We have to grow up to be the person who takes responsibility, to be the leader in the relationship. You know, and a leader, none of us would respect a leader who rules by fear and by hurting the people who are supposed to follow them.
Wow.
We would not respect that kind of a leader who's an authoritarian, who, you know, hurts the people who are followers. A leader is someone who people want to follow. And we are the leaders in our relationship with our children. And they are human beings who we need to respect, or they won't follow us. You know, we can't actually control them. All we can really do is influence them.
Mm-hmm.
And all the research that's ever been done on influence shows it comes through the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're talking, you know, political influence or, you know, a boss at work or a parent, it comes through the relationship. So if we insist on taking it personally, then we can't step up and act like the leader. We feel like a victim.
Wow.
But our child isn't victimizing us.
Yeah.
Right? So it's really, I think, the minute you start to feel like a victim, like your child is doing something to you, it's time to, you know, parent up. You know?
Right. No, I love that. I think that is such a great perspective. And just reflecting on my own parenting, I see such a difference in the way that I view my relationship with my children from my first to my third, and now thankfully with my first as well, you know, but you do evolve in that awareness, because instinctually we do take it personally, but we don't have to stay in that place. And that's just why I love you, Dr. Laura. I hope all the listeners check out AHA Parenting, because this is what it's made of. It is this type of philosophy that you're not telling us, okay, just do X, Y, and Z and they will, you know, get in line and behave. And no, it's about the relationship and the connection. Doesn't everybody want that for their kids, but they're just not sure how to get it? You're telling us it's possible for all children of all personalities. Oh, I love it. I love it so much. You're amazing. And so how did AHA Parenting come to be? This is a lot of work for you, and it's an amazing resource for parents. How did that unfold, and how has it evolved over time?
You know, I read the research. I've been trained to read a research study and ascertain whether it actually holds water, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Did they follow research guidelines that would make this a study that is worth citing, as a for instance. Uh-huh. But most parents have been trained to do that. In fact, most parents haven't read much about parenting. You know, they might read the parenting magazines, but those, you know, often are not really giving them the latest information. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted parents to have the theory and the research in a form that they could use. So that means not just the ideas, but how do you get your kid into the bathtub? Mm-hmm. Right? So it's the AHA parenting is really designed to take the theory and the studies and to give parents concrete tools that they can use every day for the problems that they will face. Because, you know, you live with children. Those yeah. are immature human beings. There will be meltdowns and tantrums and defiance and challenges and silliness and all kinds of things that parents find get in the way of moving kids through the routine. And as much as we might like to just be wonderful, loving, adoring parents every minute, you can't just do that, because right. then you never would get them into the bathtub or fed their dinner or into bed at night or through their homework or whatever else you need to do. So we do have the job of moving them through the routine. And we have the job of raising kids who will become human beings, mm-hmm. who we're proud to have in the world, and also who will go into the world and be happy and capable, responsible, able to overcome all the roadblocks that life will inevitably put in their way so that they can develop their unique gifts and contribute them to the world. These are the things we want for our children. And so how do you do that while you're also trying to just get him to stop hitting his sister? You know, how can we do all of that? So that's why the website. It's trying to give parents the concrete tools. So there's a big section of the website that is just questions and answers right. from parents. And then there are, of course, sections for each age group. And then, of course, there's the blog.
I love it. What are the most common questions you get asked?
When parents first hear about this kind of parenting, they ask, how could this be true? You mean, not? You really don't even recommend timeouts? That's just lunacy. How does a kid learn to do the right thing if you don't discipline them? And I say, well, discipline is guidance. It's the same word as disciple, and it means to guide. It does not mean to punish. Punishment, if you look it up in the dictionary, is to purposely cause another person pain, either physical or emotional, in order to get them to do what you want mm-hmm. in the future. So children don't learn when they're being punished or caused pain because they're in a state of emergency at that point. They don't learn from that. Because their brain, the learning centers of the brain, actually shut down when we're under threat, and they perceive punishment as a threat. Mm-hmm. And they also interpret punishment as being, they don't think it's the way you're trying to teach them to do the right thing. They think it's the way you're trying to solve your problem of getting them to do what you want. So they're learning from you that causing other people emotional or physical pain is the way to get what you want, and using power against other people as a way to solve problems. So That's sort of the most common when people first hear these ideas, and that's the answer. I would say when people start to do this work, they immediately see, when they start to try this approach, they immediately see a difference when they don't just jump in to yell at their kid or to punish, but they say, all right, my four-year-old just is screaming at me, and I just heard from a mom in London who wrote to me that her four-year-old was screaming at her because he didn't want to put on his coat to go outside, but it was raining and cold, and she wanted him to put his coat on. And she said, you know, I really don't like this no discipline approach of yours, but I thought I would try it because I didn't know what else to do. So she says she dropped down to his level. She looked him in the eyes. She summed up all of her compassion, and she said, oh, sweetheart, you're having such a hard time. It seems like you need a mummy cuddle. And he fell into her arms and sobbed and sobbed. And then when he was done, he happily put his coat on and left the house. That was it.
Right.
So parents start to do this and they realize, oh my goodness, it's like a magic wand.
It is, and it seems too simple. That's why people are skeptical, you know? It seems too simple, but when you think what are the basic human needs, it's being heard and, you know, having someone understand and listen to you.
Well, this is the question at that point. There are two questions that arise for parents at that point. One is, how do I calm down enough to do what that mom did?
Yes.
That's a hard question. And then the second question is, actually there are three questions. The second question is, but did I just let him get away with something? I mean, he was yelling at me a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third question is, what if that doesn't work? Right? So those would be the next set of things that face people when they try this approach. And I would say the answer to the first one about how you calm down, we talked about in detail at the beginning of our conversation. It's all about stop, drop, and breathe. You train yourself. You support yourself with a little mantra. You practice, 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 and it actually changes the way your brain is wired so that you have more options in that moment when you're upset. So that's the answer to how you calm down.
Mm-hmm.
The answer to did you let him get away with something is this. If you had yelled at him, you would have escalated the drama, and he would have felt unfairly treated, which he already was very upset, as you could see.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have felt unfairly treated and misunderstood, and he wouldn't have learned the lesson, don't yell at you, because in fact, you were yelling at him. You're modeling yelling at that point. So what exactly do you think he's learned? If you stay calm, but you still punish him at that point, all right, that's it. No screens for you today, right? And you reinforce that the rest of the day. He's still walking around with a chip on his shoulder like, my mom never understands. Mm-hmm. You know, I was so upset, and she just, when I'm upset, she doesn't understand. She just punishes me. And so that's not the lesson that we're trying to teach, which is respect for you. In fact, you've just eroded the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You've eroded the likelihood of respect. Instead, if you do what I just described, what is he learning? Wow. When I'm really upset, my mom really understands and she helps me. And in fact, there's no reason to yell at her. She's in my corner.
Yeah.
And I can tell you over and over again, when my daughter was growing up and something like this happened with her, she would apologize to me, maybe not right then, even if she fell into my arms crying and then put her coat on happily, maybe not right then, but later if I brought it up and said, not in a way that said, now you owe me an apology, but in a way that said, you know, this morning that was so hard for us. I really hate putting on your coat before you go outside. And then give her a chance to say her side, which I know her side was always the same, which was, but mom, I was hot. I didn't want to put a coat on while I was hot. I mean, you know, remember, not prefrontal cortex yet. She can't plan ahead. She doesn't have the planning function to know she'll be cold when she goes outside, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, in fact, with her, I learned, don't fight about it inside. Wait till we walk outside. She can change her view.
She can make the point, yeah.
But my point is that she would, in those conversations, when I would listen and say, huh, yeah, I hear you. And then I would say, and so you screamed at me, right? And she would say, but I felt you weren't listening to me. And I would say, wow, you're right. I didn't listen to your perspective. But it's also not okay to scream at me. What could we do next time? And she would say, even when she was quite young, I'm sorry I screamed at you, Mom, but could you listen to me next time? Right? So notice it's a two-way street there. We're both learning something about how to get along better.
Right. And there is closure to the event. You're not just letting them get away for screaming. There is a resolution and there is some awareness now that everyone's in a calm state. She's ready to listen to you. You're ready to listen to her. And something productive can come out of that event. So maybe it'll be different next time. And it probably will be different next time.
Yes. And notice that I changed too.
Yes, yes.
So I ran to it assuming she's wrong. She's supposed to put her coat on when I tell her.
Yes.
And I came out of it having learned, oh, that's really not something she can do yet.
Mm-hmm.
She feels like she's hot. She feels like I'm not hearing her. I'm not meeting her needs.
Mm-hmm.
She relies on me to be the grown-up, to keep her safe and to meet her needs. And so when I don't do that, there's an emotional cutoff that I've just created, which is part of why she's screaming it.
Wow. That's boom. Yes, that's it. That's it, Dr. Laura. So for parents who are listening, they're thinking, yes, I'm on board. This is amazing. What is one thing they can do today to start building that connection with their child? Maybe they're a natural yeller and that's been the climate of their home and of their relationship. Is there anything that they can do today that you can just point to them? Like, if you do this today, you'll be you know, setting off on the right path. Is there anything like that?
Definitely. There's a set of tools that I call preventive maintenance.
Okay.
And they work. I've never seen them not work. And they work. Each one of them is very powerful by itself, but they work even better when you use them all.
Okay.
But the first one is what I call 24/7 empathy. Now, no one is empathic 24/7. But, I mean, you know, maybe Mother Teresa was, but she wasn't a mother. Right? So I think to be empathic 24/7 when you have kids is pretty hard. But if you aim for being empathic more often, and all empathy means is you see it from their point of view.
Okay.
Just like I did with my daughter in that scenario that I just listed. You see it from their point of view. And if you can try to do that all day, every day, you're going to reframe everything in your home. Your child is going to feel understood, and you're going to lose your temper a lot less often. So if you just start there, that's a great place to start. If you want to add a tool, I would add one-on-one time with each child daily.
I love that.
When you have siblings who have friction between them.
Mm-hmm.
It changes everything for them to have that one-on-one time with you. And they will actually begin to ask for it. If you do it every day, they will start to say, oh, you know, can we have them have mommy and Alice time? Because they learn that they get your undivided attention and they feel loved. And they act better when they get that.
Absolutely. And that
they're more cooperative.
Yes, and that is my number one tip for new moms who are adding children, is that one-on-one time with older children. Anytime you go to nurse or feed the baby, you will see like your kids want to interrupt you and they need something at that moment that you hunker down with the baby ready to feed, right? Because they know you're occupied and they want your attention. And so the best thing I ever did was spending 10 minutes or maybe even less than that if they don't need it, but saying, okay, I'm going to go feed the baby. So what do you need? Can I play Legos with you for a few minutes? Do you need a snack? Do you need water? And I set them up for success. I spend a little time. And then their bucket is filled. So then when I say, okay, now it's time for me to go feed the baby, I leave, I go sit in my chair, and their bucket has been filled. They've felt cared for and heard, and they have what they need, and they don't bother me. It's the same thing with getting on the phone, right? Anytime you need to make a phone call, that's when they're on you. So set, if you know you're going to be on a 45-minute phone call with the insurance company, set them up for success. Spend 10 minutes. Hey, let's play some dinosaurs. And then mom's going to get on the phone. That has been a game changer. And usually it's 5 to 10 minutes. It's not even a huge time investment.
Right. But what you've done is strengthened the bond with them.
Yes.
Because what happens when you get on the phone or sit down with a baby, your attention is elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And young children are designed by Mother Nature to survive, which is why the human race is still here.
Mm-hmm.
How do they survive? Well, they make sure that there's an adult in the near vicinity who they're the number one priority of that adult.
Mm-hmm.
And if a tiger jumps out of the bushes, you're going to save them. So what happens when you sit down with a baby? They're not your
they're
number
on
one
you.
Priority. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. In fact, if a tiger jumps out of the bushes, who are you going to save?
Oh my goodness.
All right. So that's the basis.
It's hard. Belief. Yeah.
So what you described is perfect because what you're doing is you're giving your child tangible evidence. You said their bucket is full.
Yeah.
Yes. You've rebuilt that relationship right there at 10 minutes. So they feel like, okay, I matter to mom. My life is not at risk just because she's getting on the phone.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And we rebuild that all day, every day. So even if we have a rough morning, we can get it back on track. It's not a blown day just because we had trouble getting out the door in the morning. You know, we can, it's a moment to moment interaction with our child and a simple hug, a kiss, looking them straight in the eye. And giving them a compliment and just saying, I just love you so much. Or I'm proud of you when you did blank. That just does so much for building that bond. And it just puffs them up. And they want to meet your expectations. They really do. They just need to know how to do it.
That's exactly right.
I love
That's exactly right. And some parents will say, well, but, you know, I do this stuff with my kid. I spend the baby's nap time with my son. But then when the baby wakes up, you know, my oldest is, you know, still mean to him, right? And so what do I do then? And the answer is sometimes kids have feelings that they need extra help with, and you don't have to be a clinical psychologist to give them that help. Here's how you do it. The first thing you do is get them laughing. Every single day, some real belly laughs, that when they laugh, it changes their body's chemistry. So if they're walking around with stress hormones, laughter reduces those stress hormones. Stress is just fear. So it reduces the fear hormones that make the kid lash out aggressively. And when you laugh with someone, the bonding hormones in your bloodstream increase in both of you. So not only are you strengthening your relationship with your child, but you're also helping your child's, you know, the stress hormones and fear hormones go down, and the positive feel-good bonding hormones that are affiliative that make him want to be a nice person and connect go up. So every single day, every kid needs to laugh. That's part of preventive maintenance. And if you have a kid who's acting out in any way, you'll find that doing this makes a tremendous difference in their ability to control themselves and not be mean to the baby or be reactive to you.
I love that goal. Like, what a fun goal to help your kids to laugh every day. You know, it's not as fun to be like, okay, we're going to have a new homework system and we're going to lay the smack down. No, let's all get laughing. That is such a great outlook for the day. I'm like, that's our goal today. That's, you know, mission number one.
Yeah.
Dr. Laura, I could talk to you all day, but I know you don't have time for that. So we're going to wrap up, but I just appreciate all these insights. And obviously, for more of you and your perspective and your philosophy, they can access your books. And we'll have all of this on extraordinarymomspodcast.com and all the links to your books and Aha Parenting. And there's just endless resources. But I want to ask you one final question that I ask all my guests, and I'm really curious about your answer. And it's this: what would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
I would say you can postpone anything but love. Wow. Just in that moment, you don't have to teach a lesson. If you feel an urgent need to set your child straight, that's just fear talking. Any urgent need is fear. Just take a deep breath, choose love, connect. If you only do that, your child is going to be fine.
Ooh, I have tears in my eyes. I heard one time, what's the loving thing to do? Anytime you have a question in life, what's the loving thing to do? And you can never go wrong. You know, you may not, if you may feel like you never know what you're doing, but if you're doing things out of love and you're doing the loving thing, I think you're okay.
I think it's the most powerful force in the world.
I do too.
And if we've got love on our side, you know.
I can go about my day now. I'm armored with the Dr. Laura way. And thank you, Dr. Laura. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your passion and for providing so many resources to moms that need them. And so I'm excited to point them to you to get a little more help and tips in their arsenal. But it's simple. It's simple, isn't it?
It's not easy.
It's not easy, but it's simple. Yeah.
I think it's the hardest thing we ever do.
Yeah.
Is controlling ourselves so we can be good parents.
Yes.
But you know, it is simple in the end, right? Mm-hmm. So we can keep, even when we make mistakes, which we all will, you can keep orienting back to that goal. And the goal is really simple. And you know, two steps forward, one step back still takes you. In a year, you'll be in a whole new landscape.
Wow. I love it. Thank you, Dr. Laura. Thank you for what you do for moms everywhere. You're amazing. And you have personally changed my life. So thank you very much for taking the time to chat with me on the podcast today.
My pleasure.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Do you see why I love Dr. Laura? Oh, she's amazing. She is so wise. And I have gained so much from reading her articles. But then hearing her speak is, like I told her after I got off the call, off the recording, it's like a therapy session. It really is. And I love that she has such tangible ways to really impact your relationship with your kids starting today.
And it may not fix a current problem that you're having in your family or with a certain child, but it will definitely get you on the right road, and it will definitely start repairing and rebuilding that relationship. And we all have that opportunity. Every single interaction that we have with our kids, we have that opportunity to really strengthen that bond, like she said. I still have tears in my eyes. I can't believe, A, that I just talked with Dr. Laura, and then that quote, "You can postpone anything but love." Come on. Come on. Is that the best? Oh, Dr. Laura, thank you for being on the show. Like I said, you can always find more information in the show notes on extraordinarymomspodcast.com. I'll have links to everything involving Dr. Laura on that website. And if you want to follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3, I post over there. And make sure that if you listen on iTunes that you are subscribed. That way, every time a new episode comes out, you will get them directly in your feed. And if you're a new around here, go back over the archives and pick a few new episodes to listen to. I know you'll get so much out of them. So I hope everyone has an awesome day and you just take a little time to build that bond and love on your kids. You are doing better than you think you are. Have an awesome day, and I'll see you next week with another Extraordinary Mom.